Do faith and religion contradict each other? We're going to talk about that issue, the issue of science and faith. Our guest is Dr. Andy Walsh. He earned a PhD and did some postdoctorate work at Carnegie Mellon University. He also earned a PhD in molecular biology and immunology from Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. He also serves as a science writer for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Dr. Walsh, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure. Okay, you have a quote here, Christianity and faith can productively engage with each other. Would you unpack that, especially in light of some of the myths that some people have that, the two contradict each other?
Sure. So we can go, you know, we can look at that question historically. We can go back to the origins of what we now call science and the scientific method and look at the fact that a number of people who developed the scientific method and who were early scientists were motivated to do so by their Christian theology, their Christian belief, mm-hmm. their expectation that because the world was created by a God who wanted to be understood by his creation or specifically by us, that the world would be understandable in some way and that we would be created with the faculties to understand that world. And so in that sense, Christian theology and the science combined to be, you know, very productive in producing new science, and in fact, a whole new way of exploring the natural world in terms of the scientific method. And then since then, a number of folks who have been Christians and believers have found studying God and His creation through science to be very encouraging and uplifting. And the things that I write about in the book is how, following the tradition of the Bible itself, we can use what we've learned from science, the language and the concepts that we're getting through our scientific investigations, to help us talk about God and our beliefs and how we relate to each other as a community of believers in new ways and in different ways using those terms and those concepts.
Okay, so what is the name of the actual book?
The book is called Faith Across the Multiverse, Parables for Modern Science.
Okay, and what does multiverse mean?
Sure. So multiverse is a concept that comes from physics. It's just the idea that although all we can say for sure is that we live in one, is about what we can see and observe in our physical reality, but there is some reason to think based on certain models of how that universe arose and is continuing to develop, that there might be other such universes that may or may not be physically connected to ours, or causally connected to ours, but that still exist in some parallel fashion where different kinds of things might be happening. Maybe you and I are having a different version of this conversation, or maybe there is no equivalent of you and I in those other universes. We don't know for sure if this multiverse hypothesis, or actually there are multiple multiverse hypotheses, actually describe the reality that we live in, but it's a useful tool that scientists have found for describing certain properties of the world.
Wouldn't it be... just grammatically, wouldn't it make more sense to say faith across the multiverses? I mean, plural?
So the multiverse is the ensemble of universes. So in that sense, there's a multiverse that contains a variety of universes.
Okay, so it's like one hippopotami is two hippopotamus or whatever. Okay, so parables from modern science. Okay, give an example of a faith lesson from science.
Sure. So one of the ones that I really enjoy from the book, so there's a concept that we have learned from mathematics, the mathematics we call chaos theory. This idea, people might be familiar with the butterfly effect, something that comes up in the book and in the movie Jurassic Park, this idea that some systems, if you make small changes at the beginning, you get big differences in outcome at the end. A lot of things we encounter in everyday experience, you throw something a little bit harder, it goes just a little bit further. You throw a little bit softer, it goes just a little bit, not quite as far. But there are some systems where if you make just a small tweak at the beginning, you get a really big change in the outcome. It seems like the weather might be a case of that kind of system. And so the butterfly effect takes its name from this idea that if a butterfly flaps its wings in one part of the world, you get rain in a different part of the world a week later, whereas if that butterfly hadn't flapped its wings, that rain wouldn't have happened at all. We don't know whether it works exactly that way, but we do know that it is sensitive to the starting conditions.
Okay, I understand that the book is divided into four distinct parts. You want to explain those?
Sure. So that what I was talking about there is from the first part of the book, talking about math. And I use the math of chaos theory that I was just describing to talk about grace, and I use other concepts from math to talk about things like faith and sin. Then I move on to physics. I'm using physics to talk about understanding of the person of Jesus and his incarnation. Then I use some examples from biology to talk about how, as a group of believers, a community of believers, we live together and follow Jesus together as a church or as a body. And then finally, talk about some concepts from computer science to explore sort of practical questions of how do we go about our lives, our daily lives as Christians.
Okay. Biology and the body. What can we learn? Yeah, that's interesting. It makes me immediately think of 1 Corinthians 12, where Paul says that the body of Christ is like a human body and each part needs each other.
Exactly so. And in that particular case, I'm taking direct inspiration from a particular analogy from the Bible and building on it. So we now understand that we can divide our bodies up not just into big parts like organs and limbs and hands and feet and so forth, but that the sort of smallest individual unit of our bodies is a cell. Each cell in our body contains a full copy of what we call our genome, all the DNA that makes up that genome that encodes for all the different proteins and genes that make us biologically who we are. But no individual cell is fully expressing the entirety of that genome at any given time. Rather, the sum total of all of our cells over the entirety of our lifetimes will express the entirety of that genome. And so I make that connection to thinking about us as individual believers in the church as being sort of like the cells that make up that body. And so we all have access to the same Bible, which is sort of in this analogy representing the genome, right? It's where we derive all of our traditions and theology from, and doctrine. And so we all have access to that same Bible, but at any given moment, any individual Christian is not necessarily expressing the entirety of the Bible, but it's the entire church over all of time and all the different people in the church that express the entirety of the Bible.
Hmm. So in other words, we each have our part to play, and it's incumbent upon us to each be faithful to whatever the Lord's called us to, something like that.
Exactly, just as Paul was trying to get across, it's just sort of updating that using more current biological language.
Yeah, okay, good. Let me ask you this. Is there a literal Adam and Eve? I mean, of course, the Bible would demand such, and I believe in such, and I do think that's probably where some of the guns of science, more of the atheistic side of things, tries to aim their guns at Adam and Eve. But comment on Adam and Eve, if you would.
Sure. So in my book, I don't insist on any particular understanding of Adam and Eve. I recognize that some Christians are okay with a less historical reading of the accounts of Adam and Eve. Other folks feel that's a very important concept, as you say. I would actually recommend another book that just came out, Genealogical Adam and Eve by S. Joshua Swamidas from InterVarsity Press. The whole book on that topic, and he explains a lot about the science of population genetics, human population genetics, and what that tells us about the history of humanity, and also what that doesn't tell us about the history of humanity, and that what we currently know about human population genetics does not rule out the possibility that there was a historical couple named Adam and Eve who are the genealogical, but not necessarily genetic, ancestors of all living people today.
Right, but if there was no first Adam, then what's the point of the second Adam? You know, I mean, Paul makes a big deal about the first Adam, and you know, in Adam's fall, we sinned all, to quote the Puritans in the New England Primer.
Right, and so that book is recognizing that and saying, yes, there is no reason for science, there's no reason based on science to rule out the possibility of an actual first historical Adam, and explains in more detail why that is the case.
Okay, tell
so
us.
He would agree with you that, yeah, that you know the, that writings of Paul and so forth are important, and this is how we can understand them in light of current biology.
Okay, tell us about your own faith journey. Tell us about, and especially where science interacted, and what contradictions did you see, and you know, how did you resolve this, whatever.
Sure. So I've been attending church from a very early age, and decided to make my own commitment to follow Jesus, you know, around about kindergarten, attended Christian school up through kindergarten through 12th grade, so actually got a lot of education both in, you know, science and in the Bible in connection with each other. Was involved with InterVarsity as a undergraduate and graduate student. Learned more about sort of more practical questions of how to be an academic and a scientist and also a Christian believer, and wrestling with a lot of the questions that, you brought up and others that people have about origins and so forth, and how different people have answered those questions at, different times. I was actually in graduate school that I was in a Bible study with in that context, having a conversation about a particular passage about our expectations for Jesus to return again and how long we should wait and is it overdue and, how likely is it to happen tomorrow if it hasn't happened for 2,000 years and all that. And it actually occurred to me that something that I just learned in probability theory could make it easier for us to have that conversation and actually make it intellectually plausible that, Jesus' return could still be just as likely tomorrow as it was 2,000 years ago, even though we've been waiting that long, that there actually are probability models that work that way. I mentioned that in the group. There were some other folks in the group who were also math students who understood the connection that I was making and found it helpful to themselves as well. So that was what really kind of sparked my interest in using these ideas from science and the language of science to help talk about some of these questions we had about the Bible in a little bit different way. Not necessarily changing the interpretation, but just finding a different way of, thinking and talking about them.
Did you ever reach a period of doubt? And if so, how did you resolve it?
Yeah, so I would consider myself fortunate that I never really felt like I had to choose between being a Christian and pursuing a career in science. So I never really had that kind of doubt. I had the opportunity fairly early on in my college career to see the examples of Christians who maybe had engaged with science in different ways, and sort of understanding that there was a broad range of, ways that you could be a faithful Christian and a practicing scientist. And so that really helped so that when I did have questions, I already knew that there were answers out there. There were examples of people who had already addressed those questions and how they worked through it and knew where to go. Even if I didn't know exactly what answers they had figured out, I knew what books to read or what people to ask those questions of. So I didn't have to kind of be by myself and wondering if there was ever going to be an answer to these questions.
Well, do you mind sharing at least the title of one or two of those books that helped you?
Sure. So the writings of John Polkinghorne, in particular, the Faith of a Physicist, I think is the name of the book, was helpful to me in that regard. There were also just folks, peers on campus who were helpful to me. So not necessarily books, but, professors or other students who I was talking to as well.
Okay, now let me ask you this. When it comes to the study that scientists do, it seems as if the more we know about the universe at the microscopic level and at the telescopic level, and we have only about a minute left, it seems like the more we know, the more we see, in effect, the handiwork of God, and yet scientists are among, some of the first to disbelieve in God. That's a contradiction to me. 1 minute to go.
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting mystery. I think if you're only using the tools of science, you may not be able to find science. The question is God in that star or under that, behind that atomic structure or whatever? And, the answer doesn't seem to be evident in the tools of science. But if you're willing to come to it from a different perspective, that you already have that faith in God, or at least the possibility of God, then it seems to open up people's ideas about that through just the wonder of it all, or the intricacy of it all, seems to spark greater belief.
So it's kind of like the old song from Simon and Garfunkel: "A man, he believes what he wants to believe and disregards the rest." La 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 la. Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us. Again, the book is called "Faith Across the Multiverse: Parables from Modern Science," and it's by Dr. Andy Walsh. His website is faithacrossthemultiverse.com. Thank you, Dr. Walsh.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.